Everybody, I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. So glad you're here with me. And thank you for caring about all things related to food. And sometimes it's a difficult subject to talk about. But one of the things that I really enjoy about this program is meeting wonderful people who are doing good things and making a difference. And trying to create a little joy, a little space for compassion and help other beings on this planet from unnecessary suffering. Now, I have with me today William Crane or Bill Crane. And before we get started, just from the little I've learned about you, Bill, I really wish cloning was an option because we need more people like you.
Oh, thank you.
So let me read your brief bio here so people know who we're getting involved with today on the program. William Bill Crane is Professor Emeritus of Psychology at the City College of New York. In 2008, he and his wife, Ellen, founded Safe Haven Farm Sanctuary in Poquag?
Right, Hokkaid, you
Poquag,
got it.
New York. I'm a New Yorker. I should know how to say these town names. And the sanctuary provides a lifelong home to farmed animals rescued from slaughter and abandonment. Bill is the author of a major textbook in developmental psychology and other books and articles. In 2018, he received a PETA Hero to Animals Award for his efforts to protect black bears. We're going to be talking to Bill about all things Bill Crane. And in addition, we'll be talking about his book, Animal Stories, Lives at a Farm Sanctuary. And I also want to mention that Ellen, your wife, was director of the pediatric emergency room at Jacoby Medical Center in the Bronx. Okay, we're talking about two power people who could do anything they wanted, and somehow they chose to open a farm sanctuary. So we need to know more. First, Bill, you look familiar. Do I know you?
It could be. The same
So
here.
you've been in New York for a long time, right?
Right.
And you've been a
I
vegan
taught
for a long time.
vegan for a long time. Vegetarian, I think, 1977, 78, and then gradually switched to vegan. Oh, must be 15 years now.
And you've been an activist of some sort aside from farms, creating a farm sanctuary?
Yes, I taught at the City College of New York for 50 years, and I was a very involved in what was called open admissions, which was to make sure that people of color, students of color, had an opportunity to get into the university. And so I was very active in that, trying to protect the opportunities that were gained during the civil rights movement.
Wow.
And then I know as I got older, Ellen and me, our hearts started going more and more out to animals and their suffering, and we started learning about them. And I got interested in the bears. We lived in New Jersey at the time, and I got interested in they're going to start bear hunts, and I started going to meetings and protesting at meetings and testifying, and then I ended up going to the demonstrations and getting arrested. And
Ooh.
I spent between about 2017 and 2020, I think I spent three for 3 years, I spent several days in jail. Mostly I just stepped over a line that they said demonstrators couldn't step over, and they arrested me, and then the fines increased, and then they put me in jail three times in New Jersey, in Sussex County, New Jersey. So I've been involved in activism. To answer your question, yes, I've been pretty active for a long time.
Were you still at City College when you were arrested?
Yes, I and then I retired 2 years ago.
Okay, how did they feel about you getting arrested?
Well, they were okay. They were okay. Some I might say a few of them were even proud. I
Nice.
not behind my back. That's what they told me into my face. I don't know what they were saying behind my back. So they might have called me crazy or wild or something.
City College is a beautiful campus. And my dad went to City College. He studied engineering. And what surprises me or frustrates me is he never said to us, I want to show you City College where I went to school. And I really didn't discover it until much later in life. I never considered it as a place where I could go to school. And maybe he mentioned it and I was a teenager and I wasn't listening, or I had my own, I don't know, but I'm just sorry I discovered it so late in life. It's a lovely place.
Yeah, well, it wasn't open to women until the 50s. I mean, that was before your time, but
Right.
it was still historically, it was all white for many years,
Yeah.
and all male for many years,
Right.
and women had to go through the School of Education.
I
But it was
remember my
open to
dad.
the recent immigrants and working class, like probably your dad was.
Yeah, he grew up
They
in the Bronx.
couldn't afford college anyway, unless there was
Right.
a free university there.
Yeah, he grew up in the Bronx. He went to Bronx High School of Science and then City College.
He became an engineer, I guess.
Yes, became a mechanical engineer, and he died 7 years ago.
Oh, sorry.
A good man.
Yeah.
And what else did I want to say about City College? I just wish I had known about it ahead of time. He used to tell me that there were a few women in his class when he went to school. And the professors would say, I'll give you an A in this class if you drop out. It was
Really?
that sort of thing. Yeah.
It is a lot of discrimination that people don't know about these stories.
Right? And discrimination happens to people. It happens to all kinds of size, shapes, and colors of people. And it also happens to animals. Clearly. Please. Okay. Understatement of the year. So I'm just so curious. Well, I have no idea where I've seen you, but I know I've seen you at some events or something. I used to run Earth Save in events. I don't know if you ever heard of them. We had dinner lectures. Doesn't matter, but I know your face.
Well, you probably saw me getting arrested in the newspaper or something like that.
Anyway, yeah. Can I
I
see your
don't
face
know.
from the side and from the front? No, just kidding.
Hey, right. Well, that's a good joke.
So I need to understand this because you and your wife were super professionals at the time. You could have done anything you wanted. Why did you decide to buy a piece of property upstate New York that sounded like it needed a lot of work to build a sanctuary for animals?
Well, part of it is hard to explain. It was it's kind of a process that took place. The basic process just kind of evolved within us as we got older. It just seemed like a natural personal
Okay, that's
evolution.
not natural for most people that get older.
Okay.
They just want to go to restaurants and eat out and go to movies and travel and drink.
Yeah, that's a good point. For us, and I know for myself, it just kind of came from within. I remember in 1970, about 77 or something, I was in a Burger King restaurant with my family, and it occurred to me, what am I eating here? I'm eating a cow or having a hamburger, and then I told myself, well, they probably treat them well until I told myself they probably treat them well, it's probably very old, and that's what they slaughter them at a very old age after they had a good life. And I put the whole idea out of my mind because I didn't know any vegetarians who were vegetarian or out of ethical concerns. And then Then a few years later, just one day, I was out in the backyard in Teaneck, New Jersey, where we lived, and I just I just thought, I'm not going to eat animals anymore. At that moment, another strange experience is I felt taller. I
Wow.
suddenly just felt taller and felt more at peace with myself. And then I started reading about animals and I started hearing them, and the feelings just came over me. And Ellen was going through something similar, but she was interested in the farm sanctuary up in Watkins Glen and sending them donations. And then we bought a piece of land up here in Poquag. In 2006, we bought it, and just to live here. And I sort of didn't know that she wanted to start a farm sanctuary. Then we bought the land, and then that was her. She just assumed that's what we were going to do. And I didn't know if I'd have the patience to take care of animals. And just but I thought to myself, I had a secret motive, which is I was always interested in non-human animals, and I thought, I could teach a course on animal behavior. It's sort of what I want to teach. And if I had a farm, I could learn about it, and I wouldn't be teaching just from books. I could know something about animals. They weren't in the wild, but I could certainly learn something on if we had them. So I thought I had a research interest and a teaching interest, and I thought, I could learn about them firsthand and know what I was talking about. So I thought, okay, let's try it. And it does require, she has much more patience than I do. She's a pediatrician, and then we started the farm, and we opened up the first animals. We took them out of a live meat market. Do most people know what a live meat market is?
Why don't you let us know?
Okay, they slaughter and butcher them on the premises. So people, most cities all over the world, they have live meat markets. They're often hidden away in poorer districts, because of the smell. And on the way to Jacoby Hospital, where ran the pediatric emergency room, and she actually ran the doctor's council there for a while. She was ahead of all the doctors at the Jacoby for a they're part of the management system. Anyway, we w drove by a live meat market, and we saw a sheep staring out, and we saw goats, and so we decided if we opened, I thought if we open this farm sanctuary, the first thing I'm gonna do is get those out of they'll get those get that sheep out of there. And get a couple of goats. And later we learned a lot of activists don't, at the live meat market, people go in, they pick the animal they want slaughtered, and they slaughter it in the back room. They wrap it up in a newspaper or something, and they take it home, and they know their meat is fresh. So I don't recommend that people go into a live meat market. It takes. It's gonna, for somebody like me, it's gut-wrenching, but anyway, at times I called the health department. I saw chickens stacked on each other, and it's just terrible conditions. And I called the health department, and they said, well, it's a slaughterhouse, we can't do anything but make sure they have water and food. So we got the first four animals, mammals and two chickens out of at that one day in early 2008, when we opened the farm. Those were our first four animals. Later we learned that a lot of animal activists don't like you to purchase meat and animals at the live meat markets because it just promotes the industry.
Right.
And they have a good point, and we
Yes,
listen to
but
that.
sometimes you just have to do it. You
Yeah, I
just
just
have
want to.
to. You see someone and you want to save them. That's all.
Yeah, precisely. I'm glad you said that. Because that's how we felt. And
You look into their eyes, you can't leave them. And for
No, you
that
can't.
one, for that one person, be it a sheep or a goat or a cow, it makes a difference. What's fascinating to me We'll get to reading the book Animal Stories in a moment, but you're from New York City, and a lot of your animals came from the metro area. And, you know, we think about animal agriculture, factory farms, and certainly there are millions and millions and millions of animals that are crammed into concentrated animal feedlots and the chicken factories, and it's just horrendous. But there's a lot going on right here in the city. I'm in Queens. And there are these live meat markets that you talk about, and people are raising animals sometimes as pets, and then they don't know what to do with them. Can you share some of the things that we might be surprised to hear about that go on in the urban areas with animals?
Well, there are lots, sometimes the chickens especially that escape. Once in a while, a cow will escape a live meat market or a slaughterhouse. There are
And they get
slaughterhouses.
all the press when that happens,
They
right?
get all
Everybody's
the press.
cheering them on.
And cheering the cows on. The chickens, people see, they don't get much press. There's a lot of, they're frequently rescued. We've rescued many that walk in the streets of Queens or Brooklyn, Manhattan. People find them, the Bronx, all the boroughs. They've seen a chicken. They escape every now and then. And so that's one source. There's more than you'd think who somehow
Exactly.
get out of the hands of the knife. And then a lot of people buy, they go to Tractor Supply and buy baby chicks that are on the floor. They look so cute, peeping away, and the store makes them buy six. And they come home with them, and then they realize they're more trouble than they thought. So they might have a couple calls I have to return saying, we're filled up with it. We get a call a day,
Wow.
two calls a day. Now that it's spring, this is the time when the babies are sold, and so a lot of people are buying them. I wish that would stop. I wish Tractor Supply would stop selling them, because so many are just abandoned. People don't know what to do with them, and the farm sanctuaries like ours haven't run out of space, and we can't keep taking the ducklings and the chicks. A lot of ducks, Peking ducks, are very common. Like they make a profit, so it's going to be hard to. I don't know what I feel like going and standing in front of the Tractor Supply and saying, think before you
Right.
buy.
Well, maybe there's some policies that need to change where what people can sell and can't sell. I don't know, but
That would be
sometimes it
one
takes a
route.
law to make a change.
It probably it does. I get irritated because, people like to have a sense of responsibility. They admire that, they want that in their kids. And here you have a living being and you're taking care of it. Now you get tired of it, or it's too much trouble. Well, kids are too much trouble too at times.
Yeah, do you send them back?
Well, you might feel like it, but you have a sense of responsibility. You
Unfortunately,
don't.
in very rare cases, there are parents who do abandon their children. But for the most part, no, we keep our children. But the animals, even dogs, we don't want them
They take them to
to go anywhere.
shelters.
Yep. Or
And
if you
certainly,
move and you can't handle the animal, you know, you
those.
take your human family, but not your animal family.
And we get that story a lot on moving. And I'm getting taken a job down in Florida, somebody says, and we can't take them. They won't allow it. Where we bought our house, we won't allow them. Well, to me, buy a house where they do allow them. But they don't give them no priority, they
Yeah.
just don't have any stature in our minds. Animals are, what are they? They're not toys, but people think of them as toys. People bought a lot of animals during COVID for their kids to occupy their kids. And then we got a flood of calls for mostly the chicks and ducklings. And it's roosters. And then the other thing is roosters, we get calls all year round because when they sell these, when they sell the chickens, they can't determine the hatcheries can't determine very easily whether it's a male or a female. So most of the roosters, they know they're males, they're killed immediately. They're ground up and machines are suffocated immediately. Because roosters are useless. They don't lay eggs. The people don't buy rooster meat at the stores. They're not, they're not productive economically. But a lot of them slip through. The roosters slip through. People who order like 5 or 6 chickens are likely to get 1 or 2 roosters because it's
Wow.
very hard to determine the sex of the baby. And then a lot of towns, I would say most towns in the US, ban roosters because people don't like their crowing. So here they are with roosters, and the town bans them. What to do? A lot of people just dump them, take them to the slaughterhouse, or buy them and
Yeah,
use
you
them.
mentioned this in your book too, because plenty of urban environments and even suburban environments are noisy. There's all kinds of noises that we allow, like leaf blowers. Hello? I would hear a rooster crow 1,000 times over here in the leaf blower, and there's no pollution coming out of it, or any noticeable pollution coming out of a rooster compared to a leaf blower.
And the rooster, if I could say, the rooster, the rooster is like nature's trumpet. See, nature's expressing herself. Here I am, alive and healthy, and there's a wonderful world here we're in. It's the world that includes the animals. And Henry David Thoreau said that rooster expresses the ever effervescence of life. It's a good sound. It takes a day or two to be able to sleep through. They wake you up for a day or two. What we found in the mornings when you first hear it, if you go to the countryside, but. If I don't hear roosters now, I know something's wrong. I'm glad to hear the roosters in the morning. And you know how you wake up in the morning, sort of gradually, you wake up a little bit, go back to sleep, wake up.
Sure.
I mean, that's how I don't know if
It could be
everybody
a
does that.
comforting sound.
Yeah, precisely. It's like you hit alarm clock, okay, then you turn it off a minute, and then you go.
Yeah.
You get used to it. The comforting is a good word. So anyway, we get a lot of calls for roosters. So these are some of them. New York City bans roosters.
Thank you. Okay.
They ban all farmed animals, including pigs. We have several potbelly pigs. People buy them. They're sold without telling people that they can't have them in the city. And so some of our animals, potbellied pigs, they make wonderful pets. They really are friendly, intelligent. They love people.
Yeah.
We have one named Leo Tolstoy. The family,
do they not get too big?
they don't get they get 100 pounds. They get they're about the size of a big, large dog.
Right. But we
A
can't
little.
have them in New York City.
No, you can't have them in New York. That's a problem.
Can we just talk a little bit more about the live meat markets? Because well, I think they're
Sure.
awful, but they're also fascinating. So people go there because they want fresh meat, but the animals that are raised there, are they healthy? Do you know where they
Not
come
really.
from?
Not really. I think they buy them from factory farms,
Ah, okay.
where the factory farms they don't care about their health. A lot of the animals we take in from our farm sanctuary come in poor health. As people know, a lot of your listeners will know that the chickens are raised to gain or bred to gain for big appetites, so they gain weight very fast. They want the chickens that love to eat, and they get fat right away. That way, the industries can make more profits. The chickens are not healthy. The roosters are not healthy. They don't care about their health because they're going to slaughter them. They're going to slaughter the hens that are headed for meat, what the industry calls broilers. They're going to slaughter them at 5 or 6 weeks of age. They're not even mature. When people buy hens at the supermarket, they're buying babies. They're immature. They're not really mature Yeah, you might notice how they look kind of small for chickens. They are small. Then and they're not healthy. And they're too, if when we rescue them, they gain weight. They're too heavy for the ones who've been with us, you know. So they live 5, 6, 7 years with us, but they have trouble with their legs because they're carrying too much weight, like an obese man, like who goes to the doctor and the doctor says, you're having trouble with your legs. Well, yeah, you weigh 300 pounds. You better lose weight. And the doctors will tell them the first thing you got to do is lose
Lose
weight.
weight.
Not so easy. But so they have heart problems, just like an obese human will, who's way overweight, will start having heart problems. Those are, and they have other illnesses that are common to the chicken. So the animals that are bought and sold are not the healthy animals.
Right.
They're pro they're pro they're they don't care. They might as well be selling tires or something. But that's all the industry cares about. Just there's
Wow.
many sad facets to this.
So you got involved with this sanctuary and you thought you might write a book or teach a course. What did
Yes.
you learn as a psychologist when you got involved with animals?
Well, yes, I learned a lot. I purposely try not to read too much and try to get too much information on the internet. I wanted to go in naive and just see what I would see, not have any preconceived ideas about the animals. And I learned nothing but surprises. Just surprise after surprise. My field had been child development, so I was interested in how they relate. I was interested in how they relate to children. The first thing, our first two animals, the first four, two goats and two sheep, who came. The first thing I noticed after a few weeks that they had never made a noise. I thought that's kind of strange. Sheep are supposed to baa, and goats too. And they hadn't made a noise. And then I, until it took about 4 weeks, I think. And then they started to think, well, why would they be silent and like this? And then I started to think, well, in nature, which is the branch of animal research that appeals to me most, tries to think about how did this evolve in nature? If you see something, you know, consider the natural environment. In nature, if an animal is in severe danger, they go silent because they don't want predators to know where they are. And so these animals naturally is coming from a slaughterhouse called a meat market. Their lives were in danger. They went back to a natural instinct, was to be quiet. And then I started to think, and I never understood as a psychologist why some children stopped speaking. And when I thought about it, the cases I'd seen, I spent a lot of time in clinical psychology, the cases I'd seen, you know, there was something like a parent had left the family, dad went off to the service or something, or that somehow there was a change where the parents weren't home, and the kid. I think the kids have the human children probably have the same tendency to, from way back, is to go. We share that primordial instinct to go silent when we're in extreme danger. We kind of babies, young children, toddlers will freeze when they're in
Wow.
extreme danger. They'll freeze like animals freeze. You know, in the woods, the deer freezes when the hunter comes near, and or a leopard comes near. Well, humans have, I mean, at one time, these are my speculations, but one thing
Sure.
this started in me was speculating, why would, from the animals going silent, why would it seem to make sense to humans? We're animals too. grew up like other animals, that sometimes when there were predators around, and now there's no predators around except viruses, but at the time there were leopards and big cats. And big cats apparently were very threatening. Do you ever see the movie 2001: A Space
Yeah, of
Odyssey?
course.
That opens up with the dawn of man, they call it, and there are these ape men, and then a big leopard swoops down at night and takes one of the apes, and there's and then
Yeah.
they're scared. That probably has a grain of truth to it, what life was like
Yeah.
2 million years ago.
You always had to be on alert, right?
You had to. They were sitting there scared in their dens, hearing the howls of the night. We still feel that way. I mean, we still have movies like Jurassic Park and stuff where it's still in our psyche. But anyway, that kind of speculation, and then other things that were many other things were surprising to me. How much the animals care about each other. On the moving. Almost titled this book Katie the Hen and Other Stories, that Katie was just such a remarkably caring hen who tried to protect a bantam rooster who lived with her,
They're often caring not just about their own, but of other
right, they
species.
care about other species. A partridge would come up and snuggle up when the partridge was scared. The partridge got into her aviary, and when the partridge was scared, the partridge would run up and snuggle under her feathers, Katie's feathers. And Katie, one day the first partridge we had there, the partridge was out of the aviary, and it was getting dark, and we were scared what was going to happen. I couldn't get the partridge in because the partridge would just fly all over the place to avoid me. And I thought, he's going to get. It's really dangerous here. There are predators that come to any farm. There are weasels and raccoons, and they're gonna it's all upset. And then what? I left the door open to the aviary. And then what? The amazing thing happened. That's Katie walked out of the aviary and walked over to the partridge. Looked at the partridge, and who I don't know what Katie said to the partridge, and then Katie walked back to the aviary, and the partridge followed Katie back into the
Right.
aviary. So, explain it. You can try to explain these things, but that's what I observed, and it
Yep.
looked like Katie was the mother saying, "We got to go in for the night. Come with me."
And I believe that's what she said. And some will say we're anthropomorphizing,
Yes.
and I'm fine with that. I like science, and I think it's important to have science to prove things, but unfortunately, we get very subjective and we've kind of skewed science a bit in perhaps the wrong directions, especially when it comes to animal relations. So I'm curious, from a psychology point of view, we're starting to finally acknowledge that a lot of people can be healed from all kinds of traumatic experiences, or at least find a certain amount of comfort and improvement in their lives when they connect with animals in different ways. What are they telling us? What are they doing for us?
That's a good question. Dogs. What? There's just a story in about the soldiers in Ukraine who were sometimes carrying a dog or a cat around with them, and it kept their spirits up. Like you say, it's sort of mysterious. They're loving. I don't know. They have a capacity for love,
Unconditional love.
unconditional love, and we feel that. We sometimes seems like humans lose that a lot.
That's an understatement.
We're interested in our careers. We're interested in our money.
And what can you do for me?
What can you do for me? We're interested in ourselves, our capacity. Like Katie, I mean, she just had expressed this. We talk about a mother hen. Otherwise, there's a lot of mystery, a lot of questions to be solved. Your question, that's just a thought, that their capacity for love is very strong. I saw that, I've seen that in many examples. The story of Katie's in the book, if people want to
Yeah.
read that more.
I read
They
the
spell,
book.
yes, but as you can tell, it's spelled out. I spell it out a little better than I'm probably doing now, but in the scare, the animals when they first came were frightened. Maddie was one of the first four. We got a goat we named Maddie, and Maddie now is on her last legs, and she is, after 17 years, she's the others, the first four we've rescued her. They all died a natural death, and here's Maddie, and it's very hard to let go of
Yeah.
an animal. They bring out our love too. It's very hard to let go of an animal that's been with us a long time. People who've had old dogs know that having an old dog, it's hard. Those are hard days, and the dogs, and they miss them badly.
Yeah. Did they help you in any way to let you know that they're ready to go? And it's okay.
I'm waiting and watching Maddie. It's on my mind now. If she could only talk, what do you want me to do,
Yeah.
Maddie? She's got bad feet, so Ellen, my wife, and the vet keep working on her feet. And if she could talk, what would she say?
Yeah.
Is she ready to go, or is she? We'll err on the side of keeping her alive as long as. Unless she shows other signs
There
of
are
pain. I
some
don't know how
people
long. Go ahead.
that say they understand animals. And I don't know if you know any who might be able to
It's an interesting
tap
thought.
into Maddie to see.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought.
I'm open to all of that. And it's very frustrating when science wants to squash these things just because
Well, yeah,
it's
that's
unknown and we don't understand. But the more we open ourselves up, it just makes sense that animals, non-human animals, are going to be more like us than not like us. I mean, that's just obvious.
Well, yeah, that is. At first, I hesitate to compare it because people have this prejudice that humans are different from animals.
Yeah,
They
we're not as
say
nice.
most of the time we don't like somebody, we say he's an animal.
Yeah.
That's a pejorative term. It's an insult. What you say about the open-mindedness is something that's made a big impression on me. There's a mystery. Part of the thing is, I mean, Einstein said that there's a mystery in the world that human mind cannot grasp everything there is in the natural, in nature, meaning he meant the physical laws, but all in nature, that our minds, there are things going on that are laws and harmonies and,
There's so
aspects of
much we
beyond
don't know. I mean,
beyond the human minds. The human mind can only grasp so much, and that's Einstein. I mean, he.
yep.
So there's going to be a mystery everywhere, and we have to preserve it. And with the science that says, well, we can't attribute this because it's anthropomorphizing. We can't attribute emotions to animals because it's anthropomorphizing. That's not scientific. The scientific mind is open.
Yep.
They claim it's coming from people who call themselves scientists and the society labels as scientists, but it's not the open-mindedness that is true
Exactly.
science. And
Thank you.
so some of it is a mystery. So it's good to be open to everything. If you want to really learn, or that's sort of the lesson.
Okay, I want to focus a bit on the book, Animal Stories, Lives at a Farm Sanctuary. Now, this is an easy read. It's a quick read. people that ride the subways. You can easily read a chapter or two during your ride, and it's very uplifting. So these are all lovely stories about animals that you saved and how they integrated themselves in at the sanctuary. And some of them survived, lived a long time. Some of them did not. But they're all beautiful stories. And what I like about it is that these are stories you can share with children as well as adults, because the evil dark side, even though we know it's there and the cause of all of this, you don't focus on that. And you just quickly tell how these animals got to where they are, and then you talk about the beautiful parts. And that's nice. It's
thank you.
It's like a good way to open the door into what's going on.
That's on purpose.
It's on purpose. Good.
Yeah, on purpose. Some people criticize the things I've written and saying you're not telling the horror.
You can't always. Yeah.
But go ahead.
And I just think it's very accessible. Some people aren't ready, or they don't know how to process this. And this is a way to show so many things, just about how non-human animals do feel emotion. They do care about each other. They can learn to love. They can learn and teach us how to survive and thrive after trauma. There's so much we can learn from them.
Right. That's true. The trauma part, it's good. I haven't explored that myself and thought about that enough, the trauma. There is beauty in the world. So in the animal world, in nature, hopefully, people can appreciate the beauty in the world, that they will try to protect it. If they don't, if we think of animals as just things or the trees as just things, of course we'll let them go early on, do whatever we want with them. If they're no different than buckets or whatever physical object we come across, we'll treat them any way we want. And that's the way we've been doing. We've acted like we're the great species, but there's beauty and caring. And it's a bit laughable to
it's laughable. Bill,
we praise ourselves.
I've been vegan for 36 years and vegetarian for longer. I've been doing this a long time. I'm not an animal person. I've never, except when I was a kid, I wanted to have a dog because I guess that was a thing. And my parents said, we tried a couple times for a week. It didn't work out. And, talking about what we talked about earlier, they went to a shelter. They got a puppy who was very sick. And we send him back to the shelter. And that's just very sad now that I'm realizing that as an adult, all the things that are wrong about that. But now I'm an adult and I live in a no pets apartment building, even though there are people now, because of New York law, that can have emotional support animals. I'm not an animal person. If somebody has a dog, I'm not somebody who runs up and wants to talk to the dog and pet the dog. I can hold a cat, it's nice, but I don't want to eat them and I want them to enjoy their lives. When I read animal stories, I love them. And I don't know if that's something deep within.
Yeah. I think it, my own.
As a psychologist, can you explain myself to me?
As a psychologist, I would say that we all began loving animals. It's in our, it's the childhood within us, that children, there's a lot of tons of anecdotal evidence that kids get very upset when animals are abused, or they think they put an animal in a cage. And you see this, how, and then that we're they get upset when they learn they're eating meat. I've done a little research on this. When they learn, about 5 or 6 years old, a student and I asked 4-year-olds, "Do you eat meat?" And they all said yes. And then we asked them, "Do you eat animals?" They all said no. They're like, who would ever eat an animal? And then
Oh.
somehow at 5 or 6, after 6 years old, "You eat animals?" "Yeah, I eat animals too." And they kind of, they say it with that tone. They realize that some kids want to become vegetarians at that point. Usually the parents talk them out of it.
Right.
And we're taught, so within us, it's appreciating, I think it's appreciating our childhood feeling, it's a revival of our childhood feelings, our tenderness and a natural tenderness and empathy that we have for all life. And it's a natural, it's to get rid of that layer of indifference that society has taught us to adopt. So,
What about children's books and cartoons? So many of them have animals
because
that are
they know
human.
that kids are attracted to the animals. So all cartoons are about animals. St movies where the humans rescue animals, the Black Stallion and other Babe and other the kids are, it's the kids who come to the rescue. It's the children. The adults don't know. These kids love. It's a natural feeling for, but we suppress it. As a society, it's suppressed. So I feel in myself, it's probably if I go back, it's I'm when I started questioning, why did I start questioning eating meat? It's probably I remember I questioned that when I was a kid, questioning abuse to animals. I saw a picture of a when I was 4 or 5 years old, my parents used to drive us by down the road where there's a sign of an exterminator. And a man was going to hammer a mouse, and I got upset. Now, why is he going to hammer? And I tried to ask my parents. That's an exterminator. Don't worry about it, Bill. I thought everyone
Wow.
went by it, but they acted like I was stupid to be asking such a question. Sure, a lot of us have had experiences. We remember some of them. We don't remember. You had your dog and. Your own experience with a dog, which is sometimes very traumatic for kids sometimes.
Very, yeah.
Yeah.
So tell us
So
about.
anyway, that's my theory is that
Yeah, well, I hope that there's more integration with science and psychology and animals and where we appreciate and respect them more and are willing to learn from them because, there is so much going on that we have no
so much
idea.
abuse. Horror. They're living in horror now.
Yeah, that
The
is
lives.
sad.
They speak about horrors.
Tell us
Just
what happens at the Safe Haven Farm Sanctuary in Poquag.
Poquag. They
Poquag. I
say
said it right
Poquag.
before. Poquag.
I don't know what's right. You're right. You're close. Most people can't say it at all. Ask the question again. I was.
What happens at Safe Haven Farm Sanctuary? What can we do there?
Well, you can come and visit and get to meet some of the animals. It's fun to meet people like different animals. Kids, once again, kids for kids, if you bring kids, it's like magic for them. They'll just stare and wonder. They're just enraptured. It's like you've taken them to a magical place. But it pulls up feelings in adults also. So one thing is we do a lot of tours, hoping that if people learn what animals are like and meet animals, a lot of people, we're pretty alienated from the natural world in modern life. A lot of us have no experience with animals. A lot of people don't know what a goat is. That's a goat. That's a sheep. They don't know. one would be surprised how much we're alienated people. I don't mean to be critical, but they just don't, because they want to know, understand animals. They want to meet them, and
Yeah.
but they don't know what's a sheep, the name, what's a sheep, a pig, and so on. The thought is, if people can visit the sanctuaries and meet animals, they will maybe start questioning their food choices, and then not support the industries that are raising them in horrible conditions. So that's one thing. Is to, it's very important for people to visit. If not ours, but any farm sanctuary, it's a very good idea to visit. Now, that's one thing we do, and we take seriously, is making sure visitors have a good time. Now, of course, then there's the animal care, which is like farm. It's a farm life. It's a very difficult life. When humans moved away from hunter-gathering existence to raising crops and animals to an agricultural existence, they made a big mistake, because it's
You're not
so
the only person
time,
that said that. Yep.
and it's so time-consuming, just exhausting. And so the sanctuary life is, it's the farm life. People just tire out. It's like you say, there's something about the animals that, oh, I don't know, I wrote about it too much in this book, but they bring you, there's a peacefulness. They have a peacefulness that humans lack also, and they somehow can bring that to us. And the farm, when despite all the work, when you do all the chores and all the work at a farm, there you start to feel a peacefulness inside. I kind of feel it in my chest.
Yeah.
And there's a they bring a peacefulness to us. I think, the old cave drawings, one of the puzzles had been in the ancient cave drawings, there's full of animals, and people wondered, why so few humans? Why are they drawing animals up on the walls all the time? I think they felt that this is another speculation. I think they were made by shamans, and we found out it wasn't, it had to do with hunting, because they didn't correlate with animals they hunted. It had to do, I think it had to do with they have a peacefulness that we associate with our spiritual existence, which is the religions offer to bring us peace, may peace be with you.
Yeah.
And the animals, I think, and they made that connection early on. The animals have a peacefulness, even despite terrible things. They have a peacefulness
Yeah.
that,
Well, that's probably why emotional support animals are so popular today.
well, it could be they convey the peacefulness
Yeah.
to
Yeah.
us.
So, Bill, we have a few minutes left, and I'm just curious, as a vegan who has lived in New York City, do you have some favorite places where you like to get a good vegan meal?
I would learn from you, I think.
Are you at stay-at-home folks and make your own
Yeah,
food?
we're pretty much prisoners to the farm. We can't have to be there to watch out for the animals in case anything comes up and
So are you
questions.
living there full time now?
Yeah.
Okay.
We have since 2014. As you mentioned earlier, my wife Ellen gave up her career as a, I don't mean to brag, but she was a
Please.
famous pediatrician, and she gave up her career to take care of animals, because we couldn't rely on driving up, couldn't rely on caretakers. We kept getting phone calls. We can't find this chicken. I can't find, all these questions. So we've ended up saying we have to do it ourselves. In any case, Blossom is we used to go to Blossom a lot.
Yep, we'll be going there next week. Yep.
Yeah. Now let's see, the one on Houston Street, there's one.
Houston Street.
I can't
There's
remember the
Cam
name.
Caravan of Dreams on Sixth Street and
Okay.
First
I don't
Avenue.
know that.
Houston Street, I don't know.
Okay. New York City has many Fantastic vegan. I think they have many fantastic vegan restaurants.
Absolutely. Okay, so
Very
let's just.
lucky. People who live in New York are lucky, you know.
We are
If you live up
absolutely
where
are.
we are, you go to a pizza store and tell them to leave off the cheese, and they forget, and
Oh,
they
yeah, right?
they're not. But it's
Okay.
little by
So
little.
you've said that farm life is difficult. There's a lot of work. I can appreciate that. I'm seeing something here with your wife who was involved with pediatric emergencies, and you with psychology and animals. There's a connection here with all of that knowledge, and now you've got it all in one place where you might be able to do something really powerful with that.
She thinks that one of the things that she has been surprised, the whole experience has been full of surprises. One is that how similar anatomically and in terms of physiologically, how similar humans are non-human animals are. So that's one of the things that
One world also
one
is
world.
Einstein and Tufts, other
I think
veterinary
we're
medicine.
hearing Ellen here in the last few
If you
minutes
want
of the
to come over and
program.
say something.
Oh, hi.
This is Karen. You can mention about
Hi. I was just mentioning to Bill to mention about the One World development. Medical schools and veterinary schools are having conferences and working together to share successful treatments in whatever species they take care of with the other group, and finding that it's very helpful for both in terms of treating illnesses that otherwise wouldn't be treated. So more and more, I think professionals, or at least in medical fields, are learning that animals and humans are, or I should say, non-human animals and human animals are so similar that we hope that it will increase their feelings of, wanting to really help them and take care of them and respect them and not want to eat them,
Exactly.
So that's
Good.
something
That's
that is
brilliant.
kind of nice.
Yes.
And it's a nice thing for everybody to kind of know about.
I love it. And
And
it's a
you don't want to
great.
leave you alone because I just butted
That.
in to say
No,
that.
so it was on the question, right?
It's just a great place to wrap it all up because we're almost out of time here. So, Ellen, I'm glad we
Right.
got to hear your voice there because it's an important voice. And thank you for
Right.
everything you and Bill have done. And I really would like to see something like that where we're finally acknowledging that we have more in common with non-human animals. And that's more than enough reason not to exploit them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so Bill, thank you for joining me today. And I'm glad I read Animal Stories Lives at a Farm Sanctuary. It was just a moment of feel goodness. And
Oh, great.
we
Thank you.
need more of that.
Thank
Okay,
you.
take care. I
It
hope to get up to
was
the
fun.
sanctuary sometime.
Yeah, please visit.
Okay, take care.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
That's our show for today, everybody. Thanks for joining me. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. Have a delicious week.